Cass County Sheriff Jesse Johnner, back on the show again. Now what the hell's going on, Sheriff?
Well, you know, legislative problem? Stuff.
Yeah, imagine that. What are they doing or not doing now in Bismarck?
Well,
that's going to cost us taxpayers money, even though the state is flush in cash.
Yeah, well, I think we'll just kind of start from the beginning here.
No.
We had started seeing on a few occasions where a judge in Cass County was waiving the 24/7 program fees for some participants. And so before we get into that too much, I just wanted to give your listeners an idea of what the 24/7 program is so everyone understands what we're talking about.
And number one, first though, that 24/7 program, that is not choice. That is mandated by the state of North Dakota. It says you have to offer that.
Yes.
And it's not free.
Nope. The fees from the participants is what covers the cost of the program.
Okay.
So the 24/7 program is a sobriety program that is designed to reduce the alcohol and drug use of individuals under community supervision mm-hmm. for substance-involved offenses.
Like
and
DUI, was, stuff like that?
Yep, and it okay. was modeled after South Dakota's program. Ours began in 2008. The Attorney General decided to go to that type of a model. And it's a statewide program that provides an alternative to jail time for those charged with or convicted of drunk driving or other alcohol-related offenses.
Mm-hmm.
So that's kind of the gist of it. Each person that's enrolled on the 24/7 program, they must follow program guidelines, of course. And those are sobriety testing twice per day, 7 days a week, 365 days.
I have a friend of mine whose son was on this program, mm-hmm. and it is very stringent.
Yep. The breath test will be held at 7 a.m., 7 p.m. Urine testing and drug patch testing. Electronic monitoring, including home surveillance and remote electronic alcohol monitoring. And again, like I mentioned, the program is supposed to be paid or kind of self-sufficient, so to speak, mm-hmm. based on the participants paying the fees for the program.
Yeah, so it doesn't come out of it doesn't come from us taxpayers or out of your budget.
Exactly.
Because you set your budget. Okay, this is what I got to work with for the year.
Mm-hmm.
And if you got to start playing with that budget for other programs.
Yep, and we've never had a line item for this. I mean, we have line items within our budget out at the jail for different type of programming.
Yeah.
So currently we can pull some money out of there, but I guess we never really had anyone waive the fee before. So when that happened and my staff started mentioning to me that we were starting to get some of those fees waived, then I started inquiring more about it because I just wasn't familiar with that practice. And so when I started inquiring more about it, you know, then I figured, well, we got to pull this from different line items. And I started looking into it a little bit more. A discussion was had after that with judge and was into, you know, they had a little bit different mindset on why this should take place. And I don't want to speak to that too much on the, you know, what the thought process is there. But nevertheless, because it's a state run program, and now we're taking budget funds out of the sheriff's budget, which I, you know,
that doesn't
try
make
to
any
budget
sense.
For public safety and responding to calls for service and stuff like that. I decided to generate a bill for this legislative session, and my initial language in the bill was to, if a judge waives the fee, that the sheriff then may invoice the state court system to get reimbursed for those fees.
Sure.
Okay?
Which makes sense.
I think is logical.
Because the state mandates
it. It's a state program. We have a state judge waiving the fee. It's not, the county doesn't have the program. And so then when that bill was introduced, my understanding is that someone from the state court system indicated that they don't have budget to reimburse that. I don't either. And so then my bill got changed then, because of that in the Senate to state that the judges can't waive the fees
okay.
until we get this thing figured out.
Okay.
Because what I want the listeners to understand is I think that the 24/7 program is a good program, mm-hmm. right? We got to have some alternative rehabilitation methods to try to get people back on the straight
sure.
and narrow. So I'm not against the program. I think it's a really good program. The state mandated it, like you said. We had a state judge waiving it. I just feel like we should be reimbursed from the state. Now, you know, because, again, I don't have a budget line item for it, and now we'll have to prepare a budget for it in the future. And so then some of the arguments might be,
But hold on, just stop right there for a second. And also joining us is Lieutenant Chad Violet, Cass County Sheriff's Department. And Lieutenant, you know this 24/7 program inside and out. We're going to get to you in a second. The state mandates this thing, and I see how it's written. It's right here, North Dakota Century Code 19-031-6. Myself and the Attorney General's, it says state guys, that says who is responsible for the program fees, and it says in there that it's the participant that's responsible for these fees.
Exactly.
And it's state mandated. You have a judge who is waiving fees, and that judge has indicated that she'll continue the practice of waiving fees. And so now you're saying, look, this is a state judge. This is a state mandated program. It is written that the people that are on this, they pay the fees. Now you're waiving these fees. So now my taxpayers are paying for these fees down the road. And from what the numbers that you gave to Chairman Clement in the House Judiciary Committee, because he wanted a cost analysis to run this program if judges begin waiving these fees, and you ran that, and you said my average for the cost analysis request is based on the approximate average 225 participants, in which roughly how many we had in the program in 2024. In years past, we've had as many as 340 or more in the program. The average cost, this is just for Cass County, would be approximately $323,590, and that includes salary benefits of the 24/7 coordinator. That's just Cass County.
Yep.
That could come out of your budget for what, Jess? For more officers? For running the jail?
Any of those things. Public safety equipment. This number that we're given here, like you mentioned, it goes to pay the salary of that coordinator, but then also that would be if all the fees were waived.
Yeah,
right? That's
where
the equipment stuff right now, all of them aren't being waived, so it's not.
No.
My concern was, right, is that not that the judge decides to waive these. I mean, that's up to the judge on their sentencing thing, especially pretrial. But again, my whole concern with it is if that's going to be kind of the practice, and the state wants us to run this program, then we should get reimbursed by the state.
What happened with your bill? It got shot down?
It got defeated. So it went from there after the Senate changed the language to that the judge can, or that the judge can no longer waive the fee. Then it went to the House. It went to the House Judiciary Committee, and they voted on it 7-4, I think, do not pass. And that recommendation then went to the House floor. They voted on it at sometime around 1 this afternoon, 1:30. And my bill did fail, so it was like 49-42.
So now when a judge waives his fee and we have a judge who says she's gonna continue to do this, we're paying for that now.
Yeah, we'll have to figure out where to get those costs from.
Lieutenant Chad Violet joins us, Cass County Sheriff's Department. Chad, I'll let you weigh in on all this.
Yeah, so the only thing with the 323,000 numbers, that's all the participants. That's everything if we waived all the fees. Luckily, right now, Century Code reads that if they're post-conviction, they can't waive the fees.
Okay.
But unfortunately, most of them start out pre-trial. So to calculate the difference of pre-trial and then they go to sentenced, that would be different. It might be different, but it's still a substantial amount of money.
Yeah, that's a hit to the budget.
Yeah, I mean, we'll just have to make some adjustments. I mean, I'll have to go back at the next session. Of course, it's 2 years.
2 years.
So that's why I was trying to get it at least stopped for right now so we could get something figured out. Because, I mean, my whole goal of it is, again, not to extinguish the program or anything. I mean, we all need to work together to figure it out. And if there's some state funding that can be used for the program, I mean, that's what I'm looking for, right? The thing that gets really frustrating to me is that, we're supposed to run the program. This happens, and then it's just kind of like, you figure it out. It's a state program, but hey, Sheriff, you figure it out.
Are other sheriffs upset about this, too? I got to believe.
Burley County Sheriff also wrote testimony on behalf of my bill, yeah.
What?
I mean, we're running the bigger programs, of course, in the state. So,
Does it just feel like you folks in law enforcement are just this legislative session, I think the last one too, are just it's like you're constantly fighting these lawmakers who go out there and get on their soapbox that they're all about law and order and all about, you know, making sure that, you know, we work with law enforcement, give them all the tools they need. And it's like every time you turn around, you guys are getting punched in the gut.
It does seem that way at times. It does get frustrating. Of course, all we can do is just keep looking at everything and trying to find the best route. On this particular one, what I would say for the listeners here, Cass County residents, I did have good support from our Cass County representatives mm-hmm. on this one. A number of them backed me on it.
Yeah.
I mean, it was, I can go through the names here.
No,
was,
we know who they are.
It's a lot. It was 16 of them that backed me. So I am appreciative of that. It seemed like it was more probably the western part of the state.
Not a surprise. They still consider us here. There's still bitterness that we're Imperial Cass County. That's an actual thing. It really is. That's a shame, but it's been like that for years, and I don't see it going away. Were there any lawmakers that stand out that were just being just unbelievable about this?
Well, Representative Satrum was really opposed to it. I mean, it almost seemed like he, you know, as I was doing my testimony, like he kind of, my perception was maybe not listening to everything I was mentioning, and maybe looking at it at least trying to see it from my side. So that was frustrating. And he was pretty vocal today on the floor on it.
What was he saying? He's out of Jamestown, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
You know, his perception is that if the wealthiest people weren't out on the program, they would be probably in jail anyways, and it would cost that money.
He's looking at it like that.
So,
looking nice.
But yeah, I mean, we tack on these little fees here and there and everywhere, right? And that's not the case. I mean, some of these people would be out on bond. They wouldn't be sitting in jail. So, yeah, it does get frustrating.
Hey, Lieutenant Violet, how successful has this program been?
You know, it's pretty successful. The overall numbers and all the studies have come back is that it's approximately 55% successfully completed and never get in trouble again and stuff. So obviously we'd like that number to be higher, but that's pretty substantial for the amount of people that we have on it and with addiction problems and stuff. 55% is a pretty solid number.
It is tell people what they got to go through. I know you got to go in twice a day and test. What else do you have to do?
Yeah, the 24/7 part is the twice a day is the base of it, but we also have ankle bracelets they wear that test for alcohol 24 hours a day.
That's crazy.
Or they have remote breath, drug patch tests continuously on them to make sure they're sober. Mm-hmm. So, and I mean, it's law. It's intensive, and we keep them, you know, try to keep them accountable for their actions and keep them sober, and it does work.
Yeah, so. And the reason I asked that question, Lieutenant, was because when you threw the number 55%, you know, some people go, well, that isn't, you know, maybe it was 70, but you're right. 55 is very damn successful because a lot of these folks that are on this have addiction. Mm-hmm. It's hard for them to, you know, to go without having, you know, that drink or that, you know, that drug or whatever. So to have 55% of the people on this thing be able to do that, yeah, that's success.
Yeah, and if you look at it, I mean, if we have a total of 1,000 people on the program in a year, 55, that's 550 people that successfully complete it and go through all the steps to get through it.
No. What's this thing cost? What does it cost them?
So the twice-a-day testing is $1 for each test, so it's $2 a day.
Oh, okay.
If they want to be on the remote, like a remote breath machine that they carry around, it goes off twice a day, they blow into it, that one is $5 a day. If they want to be on the ankle bracelet, that's $6 a day. And then the drug patch testing is $60 for each patch, comes to about $120 a month.
Okay. All right. And what happens if they are busted when they're on this, Lieutenant?
Well, if they're pretrial and they fail, we can arrest them immediately. It's basically a revocation of whatever they posted for bond.
Sure.
And then they can ask to see the judge or whatever. If it's post-conviction and they're sentenced on this, then generally we refer to the prosecuting attorney, whether it's the city attorney, state's attorney, and then they'll set a court date or bring them in for an order to show cause or something. They can explain themselves, and then the judge can determine what to do from there.
You're going to say something?
Yeah, I mean, I was just going to kind of just sum things up. I mean, again, we think the program is a very good program. We want it to be around. It's just probably going to be hard to sustain if we're not getting the money back from the fees.
So when did the state mandate this program?
2008.
It's been going on that long.
Yeah, in 2013 is when it became minimum mandatory for second offense or more DUIs in the state.
Okay, so that's when it's mandatory.
It's a mandatory part of a sentence if you have two or more DUIs in a 7-year period.
So if you you're mandated to this, you go through trial. How long are you on this program for, Lieutenant?
For the second and third DUIs, it's a minimum mandatory of 1 year.
Wow, you're doing it for a year. So that even makes that percentage rate pretty impressive. Mm-hmm. You got to do this for a year. Wow.
Yeah, and it's repeat offenders, too. It's not usually, you don't usually get a year for just a first DUI. It's a second or more. And then if it's a felony-level DUI, fourth or more, it's 2 years minimum mandatory.
Wow. And you're going, and you're testing twice a day. Is that 7 days a week?
Yep, unless there's a blizzard or hazardous travel is the only time we kind of excuse it because we don't want people getting an accident on the way here.
And you're going in at 7 a.m. and 7 p.m.?
Yep.
That's pretty strict. So, yeah, that 55%, that's actually a pretty impressive number. Wow. Holy smokes, man. Email says, Sheriff, how frustrated is it for the members of local law enforcement to have a needle exchange program in the city of Fargo? That's completely off the topic, but
our agency hasn't really dealt with that too much.
No. Yeah, because that's a city thing, I believe, right?
Yeah.
All right, gentlemen, anything else? There's nothing people can do now, right? This is done
session. I mean, yeah, we'll try to see if we can come up with a better game plan. Again, the initial attempt on here was just try to get reimbursement, and when that didn't go through and it went to the
I still don't understand why no reimbursement. I don't understand that.
Yeah, I'm not sure. Especially like I said, since it's a state mandate. But we'll have to work on that harder next time. I mean, that'll be the goal, right? It'll be to try to come up with a better game plan to see where maybe some appropriations could come from.
How close was the vote on this?
I think it was 49-42.
That was close. That was close. Lieutenant, go ahead.
I think there were some people that had some, further questions, obviously, that weren't in that committee and are reading things off of testimony, not being able to have a discussion like we're having now, so everyone kind of understands the whole gamut of the situation. And like I said before, I mean, we just want to be able to sustain it. That was my whole goal in just saying, hey, we got to be able to sustain the program.
Is she telling you guys why she's waiving fees and she's going to indicate that she's going to continue this practice?
Yeah, she's not the only one that waives the fees. I mean, there's a belief, I think, from some, and not that it's not a legitimate belief, would be that because people are on pretrial, they're not, they're not guilty until they go to court. So why should they be paying the fees until they go to court to see if they're, going to be convicted of the crime? Yeah. So I think that's kind of the mindset. I understand the mindset. I mean, that's, again, I want to tell judges how to sentence people. Sure. That's not really my job. I just literally was looking for the reimbursement piece so that if this was going to happen, that we could get reimbursed for it.
Another email says, first, I think Sheriff Johnner is understating this. Satcham also couldn't figure out why the state has to pay for court-appointed public defenders. Aren't they just pleading guilty? Was this question after three attempts by multiple people to explain the constitutional requirement to provide an attorney? Satcham is either a complete moron or a deliberate moron. The legislature comes up with sounds good ideas and leaves funding up to the counties or cities to fund. When the good idea includes waiving fees, they also leave that up to the city and county to figure out funding for. But the same legislature won't give Sheriff John or any way to petition to have a mentally ill inmate medicated against his will in order to protect his correction officers and other inmates from the mentally ill inmate.
I really felt like he came in there with a kind of a perception on it, had his mind made up when I was doing the testimony. So
All right, Lieutenant, anything else before I let you go?
Yeah, no, I just want to reiterate that, you know, it's a good program. It's been around for a long time, and we've had a lot of success stories. So I'd hate to see it get, you know, diminished because of this.
Well, like I said, a friend of mine, his adult son was on this thing, and yeah, he made it through successful. He made it, I know it was frustrating, but you know, it's that or go to jail, man. He didn't want to do that. Sheriff, what do you think of the bill before the legislature about darkening car windows even more? Well, that's done. That's going to the governor's desk to be signed. Right. The governor signs it. It's a done deal. Yeah, going from 50, I believe, down to 35%. And there's now also a initiated measure, if they get enough signatures on that and it passes, you could have your windows as dark as you want, including your windshield. That's obscene. That's ridiculous.
Yeah, I think that's a little too far. You know, the concern for law enforcement all the time is officer safety and be able to see in those vehicles as they're walking up on them. And that changes from day to night.
Yeah.
I mean, if it's nighttime, you know, there's some different tactical procedures and techniques that we utilize, like putting a spotlight in people's vehicles so we can see in there prior to walking up. But, you know, officers are going to have to adjust their tactics a little bit.
They
so
are.
That's what I would say to your listeners here. And, you know, if we're walking up on that vehicle and all the windows are rolled up, we can't see in there, and it's kind of a suspicious traffic stop or something we think might be a little higher risk, we're going to probably ask people to roll the windows down before we walk all the way up on there. So people just need to be cognizant of those changes law enforcement will have to make.
Yeah, I don't know how dark 35% is. I was going to swing into Window Tint Pros and actually go in there and take a look and see what the 35% is. Actually, I was going to talk about it today. We're going to talk about it tomorrow. Lieutenant, appreciate the time. Thanks, brother. I can't believe the amount of people that have been messaging me about this window tint thing, man. They're like, God, they don't like this.
Yeah.
They're like, I hate these dark windows. I'm intimidated. I don't know who's doing what behind those windows when I'm driving by them. I don't know if they're going to, you know, I don't know what their attitude is behind the wheel.
Yeah.
And that's just not from officers. Yeah. That's just from regular everyday citizens.
Well, the other thing that comes a little bit tricky with it as far as a law enforcement perspective would be that you're trying to look over and see who's driving a vehicle because maybe they did something and you want to do a complaint against that driver. And now we can't see a physical description.
Yeah, exactly. So what is going on with his mic, Ronnie?
I think it's not used to being lifted up. Might have a short in it or something.
Oh, okay.
A little bit, just a little bit.
Okay. All right, Sheriff, always a pleasure, buddy. Go get him, man.
Thank you.
Thanks, brother.